Accession number 30267, Reel 11.
Joe Patient, Reel 11. So now it's Palestine, is it, Joe?
Yes, we went to Palestine with the 620 Squadron and the Halifaxes on the last day of 45, 31st of December. And, of course, being New Year's Eve, we were a little disappointed at the reception we got. which brings back a story that I heard. When one of their favourite sayings, those who'd spent time in the Middle East, was to get your knees brown. Right? In other words, you came there looking all sickly white and so on and so forth. You're obviously newcomers. And we had one very senior RAF, well-operated officer said, yes, but if the searchlights over Berlin had been ultraviolet, I'd be a nigger by now. Which I think put one or two of their in their place. Palestine, my goodness, what a lovely place that was. And when we were first there, we passed through a village, and on one side of the road would be Jews, and the other side Arabs, but Arabs would be over on the Arab Jews side, and Jews would be over on the Arab side playing trick-track, or another would backgammon, or in a, the children would play with each other, and they would, I've never known, I wrote back to my wife, what a rosy-cheeked and healthy-looking children they were. This was soon to change.
Well, we knew it when they lived side by side. Thank you, Lucy. Later on we'll talk.
It was really amazing. And then to have to pick oranges off the trees, the Jaffa oranges in Palestine really are Jaffa oranges. And very, very different. I was given a batman who looked after my good self, and I always had, there was always a bowl of fruit and everything all fresh. And I was under the impression this was supplied by the Air Force. And I found Abdul was his name, he was Sudanese, yes, and we preferred the Sudanese to most of the others as servants. They were great. Anyway, I saw him in tears. I said, "What's the matter, Abdul?" I said, "Sorry, sir, no fruit." I said, "Why not?" No, I think I ticked him off at there being no fruit there, and he, with tears in his eyes, he said, "I'm sorry, Master, no money." And I then realized that he had been supplying the fruit out of his own meager earnings. I soon rectified that, of course, and recompensed him for his past expenditure, but he was a great little lad and kept our shoes beautifully polished and everything else spick and span. My first visit to Jerusalem was a little mixture of emotions. I thought that perhaps if I was killed in Jerusalem, I might have a better chance of the hereafter than previously. But I borrowed an army lorry and took my crew and also one or two other officers of my flight into Jerusalem. We were going to have a meal in David Hotel, but of course that was an officers only hotel. So we went into a very nice restaurant, and to be able to order a steak and eggs and chips was something that we hadn't had for a very, very, very long time. And I ordered a steak and I ordered two eggs, and I thought that was a bit much, but I did it. And my flight lieutenant, Garnet, Mike Garnet, he goes and orders six eggs with his steak. I thought that was a bit much, Mike, but never mind. There was a bit of a crashing of gears, because I'd never double-declutched in my life before in a car. I'd only driven a car. I'd never driven a lorry before. And, of course, with the lorry, you had to double-declutch. However, I made a point of having a lesson on it the next day after I'd got back. But we managed to get back shortly after, of course. The hotel was blown up. But the other experience I had, that was remarkable, was I felt very ill, and I ached. I didn't touch any part of my body. It was so tender and sore. I didn't know what on earth had happened to me, but I was laid low. And the doctors sent me to the hospital, and I cursed the driver of that ambulance all the way to the hospital, because it was bump. Every slight bump was torture. Apparently they called it Bornholm's disease, but then a friend of mine said, if it's anything that they don't understand, they call it Bornholm's disease. However, I didn't expect to survive. I thought I was going to pass out, but I did recover, and I was quite weak for quite a few weeks later, but I got back. Another little interesting episode was, I'll talk about padres. Padres in the forces, I found, were all very good. But I found my personal experience, the best of all padres were the Catholic padres. Although I'm not Catholic myself, you seem to be able to talk more freely to a Catholic padre. And we had one particular chap who's a very good poker player, as a matter of fact. And halfway through one of the sessions we were playing almost all night, he made the remark that that bastard, the bishop's coming tomorrow. Very, very human. Anyway, we had a raid. It was well documented, this raid by the Ergenzai Lumi, which was a terrorist group in Palestine at the time. There was the Stern Gang and the Ergenzai Lumi. They made a raid on Akia, on the armament. They'd kidnapped some Air Force and stolen their uniforms. They broke into the armory and stole 600 Sten guns. And it was a big, big peru, and they damaged several aeroplanes at the same time. The order went round that officers would now carry pistols, and that airmen should carry their rifle no matter what they were doing. Even if they were on the top of a wing of a plane, they had to take the rifle with them. It was crazy. And we had a very junior officer who used to wear his gun like a cowboy sort of sheriff, you see. And we all smiled at this. And on the forces program, on one occasion we were in the mess, there was a special request for flying officer Pritchard, I think his name was, a special music request for flying officer Pritchard. So we were in the mess, and we all had a jug of beer in our hand, wondered what was coming next, and this song came up: lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol.
sore down.
He was most embarrassed by them. But anyway, so we still had a little humour in the services.
Was that much of a threat, you know, these terrorist organisations?
Oh, well, it was indeed. We had one or two examples of dispatch riders having their heads cut off with piano wires stretched across roads and things of that nature. And then there were the landmines that were laid on the roads themselves. It was very naughty. We, as a squadron, our job was into surveying the Mediterranean for illegal immigrant ships going into Palestine. And so, of course, we were very unpopular with the Jewish population.
Were there many, many illegal ships going
through? Oh, yes, yes. What we used to do, we'd identify the ship and then pass on the information to the Admiralty, who would then put out their sort of fast boats to intercept or whatever. We never ever, of course, attacked such ships. And then I was had a most surprising order that I was to wait the arrival of Brigadier General Bowles, who's the Major General Bowles, rather, who was the GOC 6th Airborne Division, who was at Castina with gliders. I forgot to mention that we did tow gliders from England through into Palestine. At that time, the gliders were intended to go even further to the Far East. But, of course, a little later on, that was deemed unnecessary. But we did have gliders there. Major General Bowles arrived with a group captain and a couple of colonels and a major and a batman. I didn't know what on earth was going to happen. So I was to fly daily. I had no complete itinerary. I was to fly daily as per instructions. And the first was to Baghdad. And I thought to myself, what a collection of VIPs and top brass they could destroy with one little bomb in the right place. However, there was nothing untowards in Baghdad, and then we flew to the most godforsaken place on earth, which was Shaiba. And then we flew from Shaiba to Bahrain. And then I was asked to volunteer on behalf of my crew to fly into Persia, which is now, of course, Iran. We had no legal right to be there, but they wanted to know. And the reason why I was chosen became obvious, because they wanted to know whether an area that they had explored and where there was a runway, could I land gliders there or take off from gliders there? And I suppose I was the only one senior officer with glider experience, and that's why they chose me to go. But I was asked to volunteer for my crew. And I was told that if anything untoward happened to us, they would acknowledge no knowledge. They would say they had no knowledge of us, and I had gone there on my own account, which was a little bit off, considering that we knew the nasty habits of that Arabs had with various prisoners. And with Lucy in mind, I didn't like the idea. So, but anyway, we went. and I found we found the airfield. Oh, it wasn't the airfield, it was one runway in actual fact. I did a touch and a go, that is just a land and then roll a little and then take off again, so you've still got almost flying speed by the time you go. And I knew that from my experience that I could have landed a glider there or taken the glider off there from there. But I reported this duly, the photographs were taken, and of course, and we duly reported this back to the Major General. The colonels who came with us, the group captain didn't. The colonels, a lieutenant colonel and a colonel who came with us, made their report, and perhaps they got decorated for their adventure, but we heard nothing more about it. Then I flew them back to Castina and went back to Aquia. But then because of that attack on the armament, we were transferred to Cairo West in Egypt. That was interesting. We weren't there very long.
I can tell you exactly.
Bear with me. We were only there 3 weeks and came back to Aquia. Then it was rather interesting. There was a hurricane at Aquia that had had an engine change and needed air testing. And it appeared that no one had had hurricane experience. And the only single engine experience I had was a little Tiger Moth. But I suppose volunteered to air test this huge machine. Mind you, of course, the beauty of it was I at least had the knowledge of the Merlin engine with the Mosquito, so I knew what power was there. But I air tested this Hurricane. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then I made my report to headquarters, MedMe. And then out of the blue, I was told to go to Pershore, back to England, to rearm 620 Squadron with a later mark of Halifax's. So to take the old ones back and replenish them with newer ones back to Palestine. And I was in charge of that operation of rearming the thing. So back I went to England and air tested the Halifaxes in England, and on one of them we had an electrical failure fire whilst we were airborne, but that was secured. But I air tested every aircraft in turn and then arranged for a crew to take them back to Palestine. My NCO crew at that time, most of them had been demobbed, but my wireless operator, a chap called Ernie Coulson, had not been demobbed at that time. Anyway, he'd come back from leave, and I said, "How are you?" We chatted with him, we were very friendly. And I said, "What have you been doing?" He said, "Well, I got married, sir." I said, "You got married on this leave?" He said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Well, you go back on leave then." And I sent him back for another 2 weeks leave, and managed to find another wireless operator to take his place back to Palestine. So we have, in actual fact, kept in touch, and I invited him to my party, but my 90th party, but unfortunately he's disabled now in a rest home, so he couldn't make it. But we kept in touch. Then,
what other work were you doing apart from tracking these illegal ships going into Palestine? You had Halifax's and this hurricane, I believe, didn't you?
Yes. Well, we were standing by to tow any gliders if there had been an operation as such, but there wasn't at that time any operation. So, I enjoyed my stay in Palestine despite the... We used to go into Tel Aviv quite frequently, and it was varied, the welcome that we had.
Really?
There was one like a women's institute sort of place, I forget the name of it now, who welcomed us very much and sort of made very friends.
What was this sort of population? Would they have been Jewish or...
In Tel Aviv, I would say Tel Aviv was probably 80% Jewish. But, of course, there were plenty of Arabs around. But don't ask me about that, because I have very strong views on the Arab or the Palestine debacle, as we'd call it, debacle, yes. And so on.
But it would be interesting, you know, the fact that you were there at this time, and how you said earlier, Joe, that they were getting on very well.
Yeah, this is the extraordinary part about it, but there you are. Later on, when I went to Jordan, of course, I witnessed a complete reversal. However, that's to come later. Then I had the biggest surprise of my life. I, for some reason or other, was appointed Command Chief Test Pilot Middle East Forces. So I went back to Cairo as such, and then we were transferred. All the forces had to leave Egypt, and we went to the Canal Zone, where we headquarters were made at Abu Swair. And then, of course, a lovely thing happened. I qualified for Lucy and my family to join me at Abu Swair. That was really something that I'll tell you about a little later on. That was quite a prestigious posting for me, and it had all sorts of repercussions.
You were still with the RAF?
I was still with the RAF, yes. Of course, as a squadron leader at headquarters, you were a very junior officer. Almost everybody was either that or rank higher ranks. So we did have some a little lower, but not many. At there, I tested whatever aircraft there was around to be tested. I had two other test pilots under my command there that I could call upon. And if it was something really, really difficult, I rather tended to go myself. We had then we had a strange request from Cairo. Could they borrow me to test an aeroplane for them? So, of course, headquarters, this is a political thing, said by all means. So Joe goes up to Cairo and asks them what. They had dug a buffalo, an American buffalo, out of the sands, which is obviously force landed in the sand, and they looked it over and started the engine and done everything else to it, but they couldn't find any Egyptian willing to fly the thing. So they asked for a test pilot. So I went up, and it was a nasty aeroplane, all I can say. A lot of the Americans probably like them very much, but you just couldn't see it. It had a huge engine in front of it, and you could hardly see anything at all. But I took it off, and I flew it around, and I didn't aerobat it, but I flew it around and did it a normal test flight on it, and came back and landed it, but I don't think it ever flew again. I don't think so. And only on one other occasion was I called up, and that was probably a little more difficult, and that was to fly that was to come later.
When you were called, this request came from Cairo.
Mm.
This would have been the time of King Farouk.
Oh, yes.
So it would have come from his regime, would it?
Well, it would come from the Air Force, yeah. Under Farouk, yeah.
Yes, Egyptian,
yeah, Egyptian
Air Force.
Egyptian Air Force. Mm. Yes, the... Then... I had... during one of my rearming Palestine, on one of my flights back, there were two very interesting incidents on consecutive flights. The first one, I had to go into Rome and take some dispatches for the embassy there. And when I arrived at the embassy, they were going to have a party that evening, and I was asked to join it. But I had arranged to take my NCO crew into Rome for a meal and a few drinks or whatever. And they'd loaned me a jeep, the RAF had loaned me a jeep, and I took my NCO crew, and we had a little more to drink than I normally do. And when I got back to the embassy, having disposed of my crew, I was slightly tipsy. However, when I walked in, the ambassador's wife said, "Oh, scholarly patient, do you dance?" As a matter of fact, I do, and very well. So I said, "Oh, is there someone I would like you to meet?" So she took me to a very attractive lady and introduced her to me as the Contessa de Millira. Millira, I thought, that's 1,000 lira. 1,000 lira was 10 shillings, and I laughed. Very rude of me, but I laughed. And of course, a great disapproving look on this lady's face. Very attractive. But then I asked her to dance, and then, quite frankly, once she was in my arms, she was lost. However, that was a very interesting experience, and so on. I carried on my flight to England. Then I had to land at Istres, and it was on a Sunday, and they didn't want me to go any further because landing back in England meant customs charges or some silly thing, rather, on a Sunday. So I was quite happy. I'd got there early morning, quite happy. And so I went into Marseille, having never been to Marseille before. And there was it was very interesting. They went to the riverfront or the waterfront, and there was this old salt who was opening up a sea urchin, which they eat raw. And it saw me looking at it, and it offered me one, but I politely refused. And then I was accosted by all sorts of ladies with great temptations, but I was not really interested in that sort of thing. So I got into the train, having a chat with the train driver in my very schoolboy French, it was those days, very, very limited. And then I went to sleep in the train. And I woke up at a station and there was